Hi, this is Jan Fisher on the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast.
Welcome to the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, bringing you tales, tips, discussions, and great interviews, led by two veterans of the poker home game scene. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Robbie and Bruce.
We round the corner and jump into fall. Football time. Go Steelers. Go Utes. And also the perfect time of year for home game poker. Thanks for joining us. We've got a great show lined up for you. Poker players are, as a group, very creative. A listener shares a concept he has for recruiting help with a sprinkler system installation. Robbie's back on the web in another video poker roundup. Our guest this episode is Gene Hull, poker author, poker coach, the force behind the poker hoodie, and a real renaissance man when it comes to all things poker. Finally, we go old school for our one-outer with a story from a couple of poker legends. Chelsea, do you have your fantasy football team picked out yet?
Hey, how you running? Beats, suckouts, triumphs, and tragedies from last week's home game play.
Well, Robbie, again, as longtime listeners know, my home game experience, I prefer cash games as opposed to tournaments, particularly if you're playing on a weeknight, you've got a limited time. You can only have 4 or 5 hours. If you get knocked out in the first half hour of a tournament, then, what do you do for the rest of the night? Mm-hmm. But we had a very unique tournament and I couldn't resist, jumping in. It was a fairly low buy-in, so it wasn't any big investment, but it was a big O tournament.
Oh, cool.
One of our hosts, was ambitious enough to have a two-table tournament, so there were 16 people. Really, you could only play 8 people with Big O, right, and still have enough cards to do everything. Mm-hmm. Had a pretty good structure, had a period for rebuys, which you need with Big O, because it seems like everybody, is jamming the pot, and counting on those draws and things like that. But it was a lot of fun. I didn't go too deep. I got about to the end table and bailed out, but even at that, it was about 11:30 at night, and I had a feeling that with the stacks that were still there, they were probably going to be going until 1 or 2 in the morning, which, again, is kind of a late for a weeknight. But I got to applaud the people in our group. I actually mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. It'd be fun, because we have PLO tournaments quite a bit, uh-huh, sometimes mixed game tournaments, but I said it'd be fun just to have Big O, because that seems to be a very popular game.
Yeah.
When people, do a dealer's choice, they love to do the Big O, so... a Big O tournament. So, another thing to check off here in the Salt Lake market.
did you find it, it played a little bit differently than, regular Omaha? Or did it resemble similar experiences you may have had, before?
It's funny. We had two different tables, and they were almost the tale of two cities. They were so different. The one table, there seemed to be a lot of commotion on, okay, how big is a pot bet? Okay, how much is in the pot? Okay, how do we divide that? How do you read the low? Okay, there was a side pot, and how much was in the side pot? And we would joke from our table and say, hey, you guys going to play more than like three hands in a blind level? Because it seemed like it took a lot of time. Where our table, just look at the draw, but we had people a little bit more experienced in it.
Uh-huh.
I've told you I hate to deal, and I'm crappy at dealing. But I sat right across from the dealer, uh-huh, and I said, okay, Joe, I'll make you a deal. I'll make you a proposition. You deal, and I'll keep track of the pot. And he said, that's a good deal.
Oh, nice. So okay.
Between the two of us, he'd deal the cards out as soon as the bets were made and called. I'd scoop them in front of me, and I'd start dividing them out. So it just ran a lot smoother. You almost need that in a split pot game, especially a very aggressive split pot game like Big O, that, somebody to manage dividing up the pot and if it's quartered or if there's side pots and that, keeping track of it so the dealer can focus on dealing. And,
good team effort there,
worked,
yeah.
Yeah, that worked out really well. So,
cool.
Still our normal great cash games, but that was kind of fun.
Yeah, sounds like fun.
We did get an interesting email from one of our regular listeners, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
throw this out for discussion. He says, first off, I love the show. I'll admit it took me a few episodes to adjust to the new co-host,
that's me,
but I've come to really enjoy his perspective on the game.
Thank you.
The reason I'm writing is I'm getting ready to put in a sprinkler system and was looking for an inexpensive way to pay for some labor. One idea that popped into my head was to mix a little gamble into it and save me a little money as well by inviting some people over, maybe even posting a game where your buy-in is simply showing up to help with the work. Figured we could maybe work from 9 to 5 and then start a winner-take-all tournament, which would maybe have a $500 prize. Am I just a cheap, or am I a gambling junkie, or what do you think? would this work? And, you know, when I first looked at it, I thought, there's no way I would pull up to put a sprinkler system in the hot sun and that for 8 hours for a chance to win $500. I'd just soon, you know, drive to the neighboring state and buy some lottery tickets for a chance to win. But I talked to a few people in our group, and they all said, that sounds kind of fun. Yeah, we might look at doing that. I go, really? So, I don't know. What do you think?
What I think, Bruce, is that Matt would love to have the email addresses of those people you spoke to. Because it ain't going to be me either. But what I will say, Matt, though, is definitely very creative, whether it's cheap or junky, whatever you want to call it. Very creative, and that's something we need in poker. Certainly an interesting idea, and I guess based on the people Bruce spoke to, there are some people out there who'd go for it. And what I would say is, you know, the one winner of such a thing would have a really, really cool story to tell at some point in time. So, really interesting idea. Thanks for sharing it with us, Matt. And, I want to just, you know, remind our listeners here at the Top Pair Poker Podcast that we're always happy to hear from you. We are on the social networks, on Facebook. Just look for the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, and we're on Twitter at Top Pair.
And of course, email is feedback@toppair.net.
Feedback at toppair.net.
And I think this would be a topic to get some good feedback. I mean, I know some people sometimes hate to respond because they don't want to sound like they're stupid, or they don't want to be embarrassed or anything like that. But just kind of take this as a poll. Just drop a quick email or a quick comment to our Facebook or Twitter saying, yeah, I'd do the sprinkler thing, or no, I'd never do the sprinkler thing, or that's a crazy idea. So yeah, let us know what you think.
And if one of you out there has actually won a sprinkler tournament like that, please let us know. Maybe we'll even have you on, and you'll have to explain how on earth you agreed to an idea like that in the first place.
And of course, you know, if it works, maybe you could have a basement finishing, or, you know, or paint the house,
or build a house. Why not? Just go the whole
kind of like a Tom Sawyer type of thing, you know. Everybody will think this is really fun. This isn't work.
Or a laundry folding tournament. You know, I'd love to get that out of the system. You know, like very creative, Matt. Really, all joking aside, good stuff. Good stuff.
Well, Robbie, how are you running?
I'm running actually pretty well in general. It was a couple weeks since my last game, so I guess I spoke about it in the last episode. So it was a little bit of a dry spell, but got to play last night in my dad's game, which was really great. Not 16 people, just 4. Really, really tough to get a game together, but I was determined, as was my dad and the other two players who joined us, Kenny and Mo. They were on a previous episode that we had here, and we played our regular dealer's choice. And, you know, I went in just, you know, saying, oh, I need this game. I gotta have just a good time, need a little break. Life is busy, all that other stuff. And, you know, some point I realized, you know, stack is growing. I was like, hey, I should really start paying attention here. Here's a good opportunity to, you know, really, I wouldn't say make a killing, but, you know, do pretty well. Maybe, you know, hit that goal of trying to break my record a little bit. I wasn't getting anywhere close to that, but, you know, I guess as soon as I started concentrating, you know, the roller coaster took the drop downhill. So I was up, I guess, you know, about over 150, 175 bucks, which, you know, we're playing the equivalent to 25 cent, 50 cent dealer's choice, no limit, everything. So that's a pretty good amount of money. And then all of a sudden, you know, a few hands here and there, you know, I just kept getting stuck with the second best hand. And, you know, I guess I lost my concentration, or I started to play a little too loose. And before you knew it, I was, you know, I guess the equivalent amount in the hole, about $175 down. And I'm like, what the hell? How did that happen so quickly? And then we were agreeing, I think it was around, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning or so. And we're like, oh, one more hour. And I was like, okay, good. Right. And I was down to my last 20 bucks or so. And, you know, things just turned around, and I ended up winning, I guess, a total of about about $40, right?
What?
And, you know, it's one of those games like that where $40, it's not a huge win, but I felt like such a big winner after going through a roller coaster like that. So it was
a
good
feeling.
Such
an effort to get it. Yeah.
Exactly. I was like, okay, good. I'm happy we're ending now. I'm done. I'm going to get off this one. But it was a fun game. Aside from that, I will tell you some poker-related stuff that's been going on away from the felt. The company that I work for owns PokerUpdate.com. Really good, just great poker site to go and visit. Lots of good content out there. And we had something that, the role that I have at the company is head of content strategy. So, one of the things they let me do and they sort of let me take the lead on is to put together a weekly show called The Weekly Burn and Turn. It's about a 15-minute show. And, you know, me and a buddy of mine, Shimmy, we just get up there and talk a little bit about poker, about some of the articles that we put together on PokerUpdate.com. And just sort of use those topics that are written, the articles that are written by our writers as like a launching pad to have an interesting discussion on camera. And, you know, thus far, the feedback's been pretty darn cool. So I guess you could say I'm running well in that respect and looking forward to continue doing it on a weekly basis.
So you've got that on a weekly basis, and then you've got a monthly show that you're doing, too, that's kind of a summary.
That is, yes. Well, that's actually just me in front of the camera, and we're calling it that's just the monthly roundup, and we have a little baller of the month feature in that. That's just, about the weekly burn and turn, that is about 15 minutes long each week, and the monthly one is a more, I'd say, it's just also like a one-cut sort of thing over 15 minutes. And then the monthly one is much more heavily produced with some back-end editing and, funky special effects and stuff, which, makes it really, I think, a really cool watch. It's about 5 minutes long and also really great success. The latest one we just had, our baller of the month was Phil Hellmuth. And, when we tweeted out the link to the video, Hellmuth retweeted it and he was like, I'm the baller of the month with like a big exclamation mark. And, everyone like did a big cheer in the office. I was like, oh, wow. So cool. So wonderful. And, Phil, it was really cool. Yeah. We saw that, the views spike a little bit and, just to know that, Phil Hellmuth of all people, the great Phil Hellmuth just paid attention to, some random dude on the camera and, call him baller of the month. It's really gratifying. It's great to know that he's aware of it. And, whoever happened to see the video because of him, knows that, this poker update is doing pretty well. And, I'm happy to be a small part of that success. And, hopefully it'll continue trending upwards. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to tell our listeners here on Top Pair. Guys, if you want to see the videos, just go to YouTube and look for Poker Update. And, you'll see me on the monthly roundups and me and Shimmy on the weekly. They come out every Thursday and usually at the end of the month.
Well, we'll put some links to it in this episode's show notes too, so folks can get to it that way. I don't know. Should I worry you're going Hollywood on us?
Oh, Rob? You don't have to say that. But
you're going to forget the people now that you've kind of entered that next level of the stratosphere?
No, I wouldn't say that. You got to, I got to say, with Top Pair, I'm certainly all in. I'm here. I ain't leaving this table because it's a great spot to be in. But it's nice to be branching out, and it's pretty cool to have between the Card Player Lifestyle blog a written format, and now I have the audio format here at Top Pair, and also a visual format. It's very fulfilling, and as a longtime enthusiast and just lover of the game, I just grateful to have these opportunities, and it's great that the feedback has pretty much been good, so happy to keep on doing it for the audience.
Well, very good. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Bruce. So enough of us. I'm sure y'all are, curious to hear about. We got this great guest waiting for us. Today's guest, Gene Hull. He's waiting in the wings. And after a word from our sponsors, we will hear about the variety of poker-related projects he's involved with. You won't want to miss it.
It's hard to have a home poker game without playing cards, and there is a difference. Top Pair is proud to feature and recommend J-Design cards. Made of durable plastic, the right thickness for easy shuffling and dealing, plus a unique look with a pip placement, artistic backs, striking face cards, and a huge variety of colors. Give your home game players something to talk about by playing with the distinctive J-Design cards. Check the Top Pair homepage, toppair.net, for a link, or go to classicplayingcards.com and order yours today.
Seat open, table one.
Hey, wait a sec. I know this guy. He sat on my left yesterday. Ah, I wish I remember how he played.
You should have taken notes.
Oh, come on. I'm not bringing a notebook to the table. I'll look like a fish.
You don't have to. There's an app for that. Poker Notes Live. Notice a tell? Want to keep track of your live poker sessions? Use the Poker Notes Live app to tag and classify your opponents. Record your wins and losses, and improve your overall performance at the poker table. Poker Notes Live. Get it now on Google Play and the App Store. Don't ante up without it. Brought to you by CardPlayerLifestyle.com.
Hey, look who we found hanging around. Let's get a mic for him and see what he has to say.
Welcome back, folks. We're excited to have as a guest today Gene Hull. He's an author, a poker coach, an entrepreneur, and all-round poker enthusiast. Gene, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Bruce. Great to be here today.
How you doing, Gene?
Hey, Robbie.
How did you get started with poker? I mean, you seems like you've got your hand in a lot of things. What was the match that started the fuse going on it?
Friends having fun, something to do. Probably the same way it started for 99% of most folks. It started in the home game. You know, sitting down with friends, playing 5-card draw, 7-card stud for 10, 12 years before we learned that there was other games we could play. And, you know, that's really where I got started. And it snowballs from there into creating products for the business, studying the game, moving out to Vegas to play professionally, inventing the product, writing the book, and coaching now. I just started coaching, and I find that I like the teaching and the sharing of, you know, what I learn with others almost more than anything.
So where do you hail from originally?
Originally, I'm an Army brat, so I've been all over the place, but grew up mostly on the East Coast in the Baltimore and Northern Virginia area. And that's where the home game started. The official big time home game probably in maybe 2003 when the Moneymaker effect hit.
Right. Hmm.
So did you have a bankroll when you came to Vegas, or did you have other job lined up, or was it just kind of a blind leap of faith?
I was in the retirement community business through my 20s and in real estate development, and had some good experience with new projects, getting things done, not the traditional job. Even though I was hired and had a salary, it was an entrepreneurial venture with the company I was with, building a new community. And that led to me having, I guess, the courage to try other things. A friend and I, we acquired the presses from the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, put those all back together. That almost worked, but I found that when you get involved with too many partners and too much high tech, the risk is incredibly high. Mm-hmm. So it all kind of led to this process of loving poker, deciding I might want to give it a try. And I spent 2 summers coming out for about 6 weeks to just test my skills, and everything seemed to be fine. So I moved out to Vegas. Shortly after I moved to Vegas, I realized I did not want to play poker 40 hours a week for 10 years or whatever it was going to be.
But they have such great free roll offers, though. Monthly free
roll. Yeah, free rolls are just a way to get you in the wrong casino on the wrong day.
Right. I mean,
maybe not. All those extras are really good. But
They've got soup every day. You can get soup.
Trust me, I've had plenty of $500 lunches where I go down somewhere because they have great sandwiches, and I'd call my friend John and say, John, I had a $500 lunch today. He's like, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, after that, I started the poker hoodie business, and I guess I'm not really afraid to fail. I know what failure is, but to me it just means you have to try again. And whatever success I think I've had, it's come from just keeping going and not letting the failures, you know, stop me, trying to use them as something to teach me. And I try to teach the same thing when I'm coaching people about poker. If I was to summarize how you succeed, it would be on one page. You know what to do, just keep going. But unfortunately, what a lot of people like are, you know, the 1s, 2s, and 3s and the ABCs. And, you know, we provide that as well. But the biggest part is the mindset, I think, to success.
Right. Well, you mentioned Poker Hoodie, and, you know, Bruce has spoken about it a few times on previous episodes. So why don't you tell our listeners, you know, in depth from the man himself, what exactly is Poker Hoodie? What is it about? What sort of products are you offering?
Well, the Poker Hoodie is an idea I came up with in about 2008, 2009, depending on when you measure the instant thought. It took about a year to put together with prototyping and getting manufacturers set up. In short, the Poker Hoodie is a neoprene conforming table cover that converts your home table, whether it's a dining table or a rec room or a patio table, into a poker table. It's a three millimeter neoprene table cover with a bungee cord. And we've got various designs. You can check them all out on the website at pokerhoodie.com. And it came to me after I had moved to Vegas and I bought a house and I drove home for to spend 3 months getting the rest of my stuff. And, of course, during those 3 months, I played in 5 or 8 home games. And we were still playing on a table with a blanket on the top and whatever we could come up with. And I decided that we needed something better. So during the week while everybody was working and I was sitting on the couch figuring out how to play poker better when I moved back to Vegas, I invented the poker hoodie. So it all started in Virginia visiting after I had already moved to Las Vegas. And since then, it's just been a, you know, a little odyssey. I've been profitable every year. I'm not getting rich by any means, but it's been a lot of fun, and that's for me been the most important part, and meeting a lot of the great people at the different trade shows, and you know, being able to do what I want for the most part.
That's really cool. Wow. Do you invent things regularly? Was this the first thing you have invented, or you know?
Well, let me ask you this: how many things have you guys invented, and but you just didn't do something about it? I think a lot of people have probably had dozens and dozens of great ideas. but it's the second half, or what I should say, the second 90%, which makes it hard. It's getting it done. So I've had a lot of great ideas, fixing cars, fixing small things here and there, but this was the first one I really kind of took and ran with it.
Do you have, like a patent on it? Or are you pretty much exclusive with it?
We're fairly exclusive, and, you'd have to talk with my lawyers. I spend way too much money to try and espouse legal advice on that. And, in a lot of ways, patents are really just an expensive lottery ticket. They're great, but they're expensive, and, they can turn out, as I said, it's a lottery ticket. If somebody infringes, you might have a case, but of course you've got to send the army out to go take care of that. But we do enjoy some exclusivity, yes.
Right.
Wow.
You ship all over the United States, and like, I imagine it's home game players, you know, you can play anywhere in the world.
Yeah, we ship all over the world, actually. Probably shipped in at least a dozen countries by now, including the U.S. Most of our sales are in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of sales in Texas and California. Of course, they're the biggest states. Oddly, Maryland and Virginia, maybe it's my guys from the home game, you know, helping me market, but there's a lot of players back in the Maryland area. I've even gone back recently playing some of the new casinos there, the Horseshoe and then Maryland Live. Great games. Oh, my gosh, are they good games.
Very cool.
Yeah, I was excited. I you know, was introduced to you through, you know, Jan and Linda down there with the Wednesday group and that, and they were very excited about your book. But when I heard about the poker hoodie, it's like, yeah, we've talked about that a couple of times, because it's in our group, we've got maybe 8 or 10 people that host on a somewhat regular basis. And there's actually a couple of them that use the product, that have bought the product. And so I've played on it. And B, I think that just hits the home game poker player, you know, right square in the forehead, because it's, you know, again, and unless you're going to run a quasi casino, or unless you've got oodles and oodles of room in a man cave, you know, you don't want to maybe invest $500 or $600 into a dedicated poker table, or B, you might be playing in a kitchen or a dining room or someplace where there really isn't room to.
Exactly. Thanks so much to you guys for the promotion you've given me. It's just been great.
Well, it's a great product, you know. So.
I appreciate that. I always say the best marketing is a good product.
Exactly.
Well, and it works well too. Like I say, when I first started playing home games, same thing. I'd put the blanket or the flannel sheet on the table so the cards or chips wouldn't fly off. I think it's a great, inexpensive kind of compromise between having something that can help you play and make the games flow smoother, as opposed to, you know, dedicating a table or spending a lot of money.
Yeah, we also get a lot of customers, you know, bar leagues, different leagues, folks running nonprofits, you know, Elks Lodges, things like that, and they'll buy a half dozen or dozen and set up, you know, a charity event. So they're used any kind of portable need where you're setting up a lot of tables and you don't want to have 20 full-size tables. These are the perfect solution.
That's for sure. Yeah. And I remember, like, you know, many years back when I was a kid, you know, my dad had his game back in L.A., And, you know, they had a rotating game. They were like, you know, seven or eight regular players, and they always right. went to a different person's house. So, you know, what, you're going to have seven poker tables and have that difficulty? No, you can just, you know, even the group can go ahead, pitch in, and, you know, own together as a group the hoodie. And then, you know, every time you move to a different person's house, you know, take it with you. It sounds like, you know, it would be a really handy device to have.
It's definitely better than playing on a hard tile table. I'm sure we've all had those experiences. You can't get the cards up or anything.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it's cool. Well, I wanted to visit a minute about this other entity that, again, I probably go on and on too much about. I know I've mentioned it numerous times because I'm just such the jealous person, and that's your group you've got that meets every Wednesday. And, in fact, last night when I was kind of going over some notes here, I thought, oh, shoot, I hope we're not keeping him from the group. We do record on a Wednesday.
No, I can miss it once in a while, but you're right. I really do like to go.
I know you're in Vegas, so it's 11 o'clock Vegas time. Are you going to be able to make
it? Oh, yeah, I'll make it. No worries. And I could miss one once in a while. Today, actually, we have Davin, the Maven Tchaikovsky coming.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So he'll have a lot of good information. And I know the word Maven is a word that means a lot to me and probably him. It's, you know, somebody that conveys knowledge. So I like that already. And, of course, all the listeners probably know, or many of them know who he is. Very successful online player. We get a lot. We've had Oliver Bousquet, Daniel Negreanu. We get Mike Sexton every once in a while, Michael Binger. And, of course, you know, a lot of our meetings, Linda Johnson and Jan Fisher in there. So there's always, you know, a high-level professional opinion on what to do, even though I will say that most of the time we can't get everybody to agree, which is what makes the group great, you know?
Sure.
Do you come ready with, like, tons and tons of questions for each of the speakers?
I try to come with an open mind, and if a question hits me, I have a little bit of a reputation for kind of stirring the pot a little bit. I like to kind of ask a question that can't be answered so that we talk about it a while and it gets people to think, as opposed to saying, you know, answer the question A and, you know, has an exact answer. I don't try to trip people up, but I definitely have a lot of fun with it. It can get a little competitive at times. There's a lot of strong opinions and very intelligent people. It's a really diverse group of people that have a lot to say, and we have a lot of fun together.
Cool. Now, let's back up just a second, and maybe for our listeners, maybe we're making some assumptions that they kind of know what we're talking about. It's called the Wednesday Poker Discussion Group, or it's WPDG. Yep. It was started, I guess, years and years ago.
About 12 years ago.
And you originally started, Patrick, that was here in Salt Lake for a while and is part of your group. I guess he moved to Vegas. He said that some of the earlier meetings were in Binion's, in a coffee shop in Binion's. But it's, you get together once a week, Wednesday, usually in the afternoons. It's at a restaurant there in Vegas. And that's what you do. It's competitive. It's competitive as far as the, topics and you disagree about, subjects and interpretations and that. But I think what's cool is everybody kind of leaves their competitiveness at the door as far as, you know, I don't want to tell anything because I might be playing with this person and they might use whatever I say to their advantage. You're all kind of open and free and sharing knowledge and sharing information. And I just think, man, I just envy that, to have that kind of resource and be in Vegas. And obviously in Vegas, you've got access to all sorts of speakers. You've even taken it a step further where a lot of the presentations you'll tape or video or record and you actually pass out little thumb drives that people can either exchange an old one or else buy it from you. So if you miss the meeting, you can have that. Or if you didn't take a lot of copious notes, you do a lot of social things. You have, you know, Christmas parties and Thanksgiving things. You do a lot of charitable things. You'll have tournaments. You'll all get together and drive around and contribute to homeless shelters and things like that.
I think Bruce is a big fan. I'm just guessing.
Well, I think you should move back to Vegas.
Yeah, I should go down there.
We'll put a high-speed rail in up to Utah, get you down here on Wednesday.
There you go.
Well, and you also have a very lively community on the email.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't usually participate because I haven't gone to the meetings, but, man, you take one subject and you throw it out there, and you might have 50 or 100 emails over the course of a week of people back and forth giving their different opinions and things like that.
Kind of related to that, the Wednesday Poker Discussion Group, they it's at the corner of Decatur and Flamingo at Ricardo's Restaurant, if anybody wants to know. And we meet from 3 to 5, and some folks come a little early after 2 for lunch. The book that I had recently written, Poker Knows, a lot of that has to do with exactly what you were just talking about, the Wednesday discussions that we have. Even though maybe the bigger part of it is the socialization of the group and getting together and all the other things we do outside of poker, poker is what brings us together. And all of the discussions, the emails, I love the email sessions more because it's easier to get everything you want to say out as opposed to trying to compete for audio time in a meeting. But they're a big part of the book that I've written. I probably would not have done that if I was not participating in the group. And it wasn't my intention to go to the group and learn these things and share my ideas and develop this book, but it's something that came out of it. And I have, you know, a lot of the people in that group to thank for that, really everybody.
Well, that's cool. You seem to be one of the leaders in some of the email correspondence back and forth. Do you guys have titles or, you know, presidents or chairmen, or do you have a responsibility with the group?
My unofficial title is probably the guy with too many opinions.
Okay.
They're not really opinions usually. They're just ideas, and I'm trying to stir the pot. We have so many different specialists in our group. Psychologists, doctors, lawyers, engineers, math engineers, mechanical engineers, so many smart people. And what I like to try and do is just spark a discussion so that all of the ideas can come in from everybody. But there's a core group of people that participate more, but a lot of people read and keep up with the emails. And, and so it's really not a question of how much you want to write. It's just put it out there. Linda and Jan, I guess, are our matriarchs for the group. Jack Gramley is a gentleman that puts together all of the videos. He does a great job. He's been with us for about 2 years. And there's definitely a core group of 15 or 20 people that are there almost every Wednesday. And you're right. We do leave the competitiveness at the door when it comes to what we're trying to find out about our opponents. We are all very open about what we think about the game. But there's a lot of competition, I should say, in a healthy format in how we debate topics. Just if we try to ask the group, what's equity? We'll spend the whole day talking about what equity means because it's got so many different definitions for different people.
Cool. How'd you come up with the title, Poker Knows? It's an interesting title for a book.
Really, I came up with that idea. I kind of like topics that are stretchy, kind of indiscernible, things that you can't really pin down. And I thought the title meant a lot of different things. Poker knows a lot of things that it can teach us as far as when we're playing the game and learning it. We learn about other things, not just about poker. And then there's what you need to know about poker. So there's a lot of different nuances and meanings that can be in that name. And from a marketing perspective, you want the word poker in the first name when you're writing.
Sure. For search engines,
so,
yeah.
That was the only stipulation, was that the first word in the title was going to be poker. And then I, you know, spent several weeks thinking up a name, and that's what I came up with. Not everybody liked it. Most people did like the cover because the cover kind of conveys the idea of what I call the stretchy zone. I think that's where all the value lives. It's in the area of the game where not everybody's making the same decisions. If you've got a situation where everybody's going to play it the same way or make the same decisions or continue or not continue, no money really moves because everybody's doing the same thing. It's kind of like the stock market. Everybody that's chasing the same big stocks is going to keep up with the pack, just like aces, kings, ace, king. But the only way you really win is by making more money in some of these speculative areas. And that's what the book deals with a lot.
And it's a fairly recent release, right?
Yes.
You just finished it in the last few months and have it out there? Was that?
Yeah, just finished it in June and put it out right around in the middle of June. It's a blend of poker, philosophy, quantum mechanics, and some of Alice's friends from Wonderland. It's kind of it's more literature than poker. And I think the idea is to try and help folks. Well, I use an analogy. It's not in the book, but here's an example. If I gave you a screwdriver and I told you this is a screwdriver, this is how you do it, this is what you use it for to drive screws, go practice with it on these 1,000 screws, you'll be an expert. And you can carry around that tool with you in your toolbox with all the other tools that get heavy after a while. Or I can just hand you this object, I don't even need to tell you what it is, and just say, go see what you can do with this. I guarantee you that when you run into a screw, you'll know exactly what to do. But you'll also learn a lot of other things that you can do with that screwdriver. So a lot of that is really the idea of getting these ideas out of the way and kind of unlearning what we've been taught about how to use the screwdriver, about how to play poker. And then you, in the end, you kind of realize that you're the screwdriver. It's up to you to figure out what to do next. So just go do it. And I think that's a big part about success in poker, business, life, marriage, relationships, or anything.
For sure. That it's really cool. I gotta say, you know, the whole process of writing a book is fascinating to me. I do a lot of writing, but mostly in the, you know, one article at a time kind of thing. You know, you clearly at some point decided that, you know, you wanted to write a nice long book. It's, you know, over 200 pages long. You know, I imagine, you know, you went through a whole process of learning how to do this, and you're working with an editor and a publisher. Like, how long did the whole thing take, and what was that experience like for you?
Well, that's a great question.
Thank you.
It really started doing what you're doing, writing a lot of essays within our poker group. Mm-hmm. Lots of essays, writing, and sometimes they were too long. So I learned about, you know, what's the right essay length. 500 words is great. Once you start getting over 1,000, you can lose people.
Mm-hmm.
I took a creative writing course about a year before I really started writing the book, because I just said, hey, you know, it might be a great idea to go talk with a professional, take a class, meet some others. I learned a lot about what I like to write. I love writing poetry because it's a very concise way to deliver a big message. And I had lots of essays built up from over the months and years from our poker group. And somebody said, hey, you got a lot of good essays. Are you ever going to put that stuff together in a book? And I said, yeah, I think I'll probably do that. It turned out it's really hard to take all your old essays and assemble them into a book. It's really better to start over.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you integrate a lot of that knowledge, and some of that stuff makes it into your book. There's a few essays that I've written in the past that are definitely in the book, and a few poems. But the process was really just a matter of getting it all out, trying to say everything I wanted to say, and not realizing that while I was doing that, I was learning 80% of the other things that would be in the book through the process of writing it.
Cool.
How to communicate more clearly, how to make it simple enough so that the person grasps it and wants to continue to go with it. Because I think the key to learning is giving somebody a taste of something that they really like. Once they have that, they'll figure it out the rest of the way on their own. You don't have to force feed them. Sometimes trying to teach somebody too many things at once, like a golf swing, is just a mess. But if I teach you a good finish and a good starting position, you'll get a lot [S2] Right. [S1] Of the stuff in the middle right, just automatically. But if I try to explain everything that's going on in the middle, you'll be confused. You probably won't have fun. So that's a lot of the idea with the book, and that's where some of the characters from Alice in Wonderland come in. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, when Alice runs into the Cheshire Cat, and she's asking the cat, you know, well, which way should I go from here? And he basically says, well, it really doesn't matter. You're eventually going to get somewhere. so you just keep going.
Yep.
And that's what I did. I just kept going, and I have to say, writing the book is the easy part. The rewrite is the hard part. Editing.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, now you've gotten bit by the writing or the author bug. Do you see more books in the future? Is that something that you'd kind of want to?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm working on two additional books now. One's about poker, and the other's about just life. The one about pokers is about bluffing. For me, I think bluffing is one of the points in a person's poker game where they start to get to the uncomfortable zone. Yes, it's uncomfortable when you don't know odds and this and that, but you can figure all that out. Pot odds, how often you get aces, how often you're going to make your flush or your set when you see the flop or the turn in the river. You can pin that down pretty good. But bluffing is guesswork. You're guessing that they might fold. It's kind of like you're a spy in enemy territory and you don't want to be found out. So right. For a lot of folks, that level of breaking through and learning how to bluff, it's kind of similar to what happens in life. Like if you're going to start a business, to some degree, you're learning how to bluff. You're taking a risk you've never really taken and you're not sure what's going to happen. And I think there's a lot of transfer just between how people go about life and making decisions and how people go about learning how to bluff. It's kind of a hallmark in professional players. Once you learn how to bluff and where the equity lives and it becomes profitable, it's very addictive. pulling off a great bluff is awesome.
The only thing that's so good
is picking a bluff off. Oh my gosh,
oh, yeah.
That's so good. When you call with one pair hand for a huge pot and you win, it might be dumb, I don't know, but you feel good when you get it right. So
that's right.
That boy, that's the area that I need coaching on, is bluffing. And I trace mine back to my childhood and growing up, and lived in kind of a religious home, but a very loving home and supportive home. But my mother would always look at me and when she'd ask me, did you do this or where were you going or what, you know, and she'd kind of arch her eyebrow and go, and remember, no matter what you say, I'll know the truth. And if you don't tell me the truth, I'll find it out. And by God, she did.
It was amazing. She was
like a witch. You know, if I tried to say something wrong, you know, 5 hours later, she'd go, you know, what you told me wasn't right. I found out. And so I do. Whenever I go to Bluff, I kind of hear that little tape going in my mind right. Going, oh, God, you're going to be found out. Yep. You better tell the truth.
Well, that's what a pro does in a game. They've seen that before. I've seen that before. What do you think you're trying to pull here? So,
yeah.
The trick
never play poker against your mother. That's the first thing.
Yeah. I can still play mom because she doesn't know what pot odds or what hand.
There you go.
But you're right. She'll know when I'm bluffing for sure.
Yep.
Well, you mentioned also that you've just started into poker coaching. Is that something that's just recent? Or?
Just recently, about 2 months ago, I officially announced that I'll be coaching. And I actually picked a few students up just because they wanted to get coaching sooner, and I kind of let the cat out of the bag earlier in the spring. I do coaching, private lessons, small groups. One of the things I'm looking forward to doing is, you know, meeting if there's a small group of folks coming to town for a poker vacation and they want to have a pro available for a couple hours at the hotel or after a tournament. I'm available to do that. Even going out and playing golf and spending 4 hours just talking about poker. You can learn a lot about poker without cards, just talking about it. And I think for most of the people that I coach that already know the game, what I find is that it's the mental components of the game that require the most work. But when you're talking about the mental components of the game, you're not talking about cards, pot odds. So a lot of times it feels like you're not coaching about poker. So it's difficult for some students. They want to get back to what do I do? What hands do I play? And there's a point where you cannot tell somebody, play these hands, do this, that. You have to almost tell them, get in the water and feel like what it feels like to float and to swim. I can't tell you how to swim until you get in the water. You're going to have to learn to do it on your own.
Right.
I can tell them everything I know about the water, what's going to happen, you know, how much oxygen in your lungs helps you float. But until they actually get in the water or get in the game and try some of these new things and realize they're going to fail, poker is a lot about failure. Even the best players will probably lose 40% of all the situations they're in. But if you're heads up and you're winning 60% of your matches, you're crushing it.
Right.
But it doesn't feel like it when you just lost five in a row. It feels terrible.
Well, it looks like you've got a lot on your plate as far as poker. You know, when you said, I'll make my living at poker and envision maybe being a player, you might not have envisioned all these other things, but it's nice to have, you know, more than one thing to rely on.
Right.
But with all these other things now, do you play much? Do you actually play much poker anymore, or do you have find a hard time trying to fit it in?
I when you say fit it in, for me, that I do get into a phase where I feel like I'm overpacked and trying to fit things in, but I try to pull myself back from that state of mind where I'm fitting things in, because when you're fitting things in, then you've got too much on your plate.
Right. Uh-huh.
So I try to eat when I'm hungry, sleep when I'm tired, write when I'm inspired, go play poker when it feels like that's what I want to go do.
Oh, my God, that's the best quote I've heard, like, in a month. Wow.
Well, what
that's
I find
an amazing
is that
line.
Well, you still have to go chop the wood and carry the water, so to speak.
Right.
You know? So you still have to fill the till and pay the bills and eat and feed yourself. But I find that if you hold all those things in your mind and you kind of do what you want, everything takes care of itself. Yeah, I've got my days where I've got to go empty a semi-truck or move a bunch of boxes and my back is sore for 4 days. But I don't spend much time thinking about when that day or that week's going to get here. That causes too much stress. But when it gets here, I go do it. So to your question more directly, I don't play as much as I used to. Boy, the first few years, I couldn't get enough of playing, reading, learning, researching the game. Probably the last year and a half, I've spent a lot more time writing and thinking about the game than playing. And I've recently been playing a little bit more. And my goal is to move my game up to the higher stakes, you know, 5-10, 10-20 and higher. Some of that's an issue of bankroll and what's required. I've had a lot of debates on how much bankroll is required. You really only need enough for the next bet, to be quite honest, as long as you can go get more money. So that's kind of my goal, is I'd like to move up. I'd like to challenge myself. I don't really play for the money. I play for the challenge of it, and I'd love to be able to succeed at the nosebleed games.
What games do you prefer when you play? Is it just strictly Hold'em, or are you getting into some of the mixed games, or Omaha's, or Studs?
I really like Hold'em. I like all the games. In the home game, we play all the games. And for some reason, they love Omaha 8 or better, which drives me bananas. I cannot stand splitting the pot. I want the whole pot. It's just easier to figure out the odds. I think Hold'em allows for more elasticity in the error rates that players make. Because it's more of a decision and an information game versus a card game. Omaha is more of a card game because people are staying in. There's always draws. It almost always goes to the river. Hold'em is more of a game where you're really just trying to figure out where your opponents are valuing. And I take a very intuitive approach to poker. I understand a lot of the math, and it's running in the background. But generally, I'm not thinking about my equity, my odds. The only thing I'm really thinking about at the beginning of the hand is how is my opponent or the opponents, how are they valuing? Are they valuing weakly? Are they valuing strongly? And if they're valuing weakly, I can force them off their hand. If they're valuing strongly, you just get out of the way. Or if you've got a great hand, you get in the way. And all I'm really trying to do is determine where the opponent's valuing it and then drive them more in that direction to make them overvalue more if I've got a great hand, or undervalue their hand so that they'll fold. And then I just worry about the odds as the money's going in. But the main goal is to figure out how are they valuing, and how do they think I'm valuing?
Well, being in Vegas with obviously countless venues you can go play at and card rooms and things like that, do you still play home game, or is it strictly in casinos and card rooms?
I play home games when I go back to Virginia and Maryland, and okay. I've tried to get a few home games in Vegas. It's hard for some reason. I wouldn't mind a home game a couple times a month just for the fun of it. Once people know you've written a book and you coach, not many people want to play with you in a home game. So you have to take it easy on people or keep the stakes low enough. But around town, I play a dozen different rooms. I got in a little bit of a spot with Ashley Adams. I know you probably know him from House of Cards.
We had him on the show.
Yeah, we've had him as a guest, right?
And I said I like to play in all the casinos where the weakest opponents play. And that's true, but there's only one thing I put ahead of that, is I like to play in a nice environment where there's good food, clean air. So sometimes those two things conflict. Mm-hmm. And since I'm really not in it completely for the money, and I'm winning in the mildly tougher games in the nice casinos, I prefer to play there, like at the Wynn, Aria, Red Rock, Mandalay Bay. Some of the best games are probably like MGM, Harrah's, all of the kind of the tourist attractions right down on the strip. You can really get some juicy games there.
Cool. I have to ask you, at some point you sort of said to yourself, I guess, when was that point when you said to yourself, hey, I think I could be a, I think I could charge someone money to learn poker from me? When did you feel you sort of reached that point and decided to get into coaching in the first place? Because you clearly know what you're talking about and know how to market yourself. You're very well spoken. At what point? it's just from hearing you over this Top Pair, home game poker podcast. It's really great to speak to someone who is clearly thinking about the game, very involved, and we said an enthusiast, but it's to the extreme, like a real great lover of the game. It's really wonderful. At what point did you see yourself, okay, hey, I think I can coach, and what made you decide to sort of get into it and start training and helping other people do the same?
I, to back up a little bit on that, probably in 2004 when I read my first book on poker and I realized that there was a technical approach, mm-hmm. I realized that just knowing that would give me an edge. And then playing for probably 10 years as a casual recreationalist, mostly participating in our group, our Wednesday discussion group, and building up a sense of confidence, mostly in not being afraid to say something and be wrong. I think taking a risk in an idea is the best way you learn, as long as you're willing to be wrong. So probably 2 or 3 years ago, it kind of hit me, hey, I could coach. Other people were asking me, hey, have you ever thought of coaching? I didn't want to start coaching until I had written a book. I also didn't want to start playing in big events until I had written a book. I think the best success you can have is poker. In poker is to have a business going, and then when you hit it in a tournament or something where you've got all this background that carries forward, it's so hard to make a living just playing poker. Unless you're one of these top 10 guys, it's getting branded and sponsorship, and it's even getting harder for some of those guys. Some of the sponsors have pulled back. So it's a tough question that you ask. When was the exact moment? I don't know if there was one. I've always loved just teaching and helping. I even used to teach in 2004 just to my friends. Even though I was playing against them to try and win their money, once I learned pot odds, I couldn't help myself. Oh, you guys got to know about this. Let me explain this. It's not going to help my hourly rate. So I've always been that way most of my life.
That sort of happened naturally, I guess.
Yeah, it just happened naturally.
Very cool.
Oh, that's cool.
I got to ask you one more thing, though. So you said, you know, you sort of wait to hit that big strike, you know, have the other stuff in place. And so have you had any major big tournament wins or any gigantic, you know, cash game sessions to write home about that propelled you to that next level at any point in given time?
I won a bad beat jackpot for $42,000 a few years ago.
Nice.
Were you
the winner of the bad beat?
I was the loser, which is incredibly better. It's twice as much money as the other guy who needles me every week when I see him at the Red Rock. I have not really taken any shots at like main events, $5,000. When I say big events, I mean $5,000, $10,000 buy-in events.
Yeah.
I just know from the math and the technical aspects how hard it is to win and cash and how many buy-ins you have to play in. I mean, you can be down $100,000 before you even break even.
Yeah, for sure.
So I've been waiting to do that, and I'm very close to wanting to take that risk. That's probably one of my leaps, is I don't take as much risk as some of these other guys, but that's also part of the reason that everything's still staying together, so to speak. And my lifestyle hasn't really changed. I've been able to eat mostly what I want. I don't have Omaha steaks every day. But I enjoy my life, and the best revenge is living well. So that's what I try to do, is just live well every day and try to share that knowledge with others, how to do that.
Well, that's fantastic. We sure appreciate you taking the time. Fascinating things you've got to talk about, and a lot of them right on target to our home game listeners. We'll definitely, in the notes for this week's episode, put links there to your poker hoodie and to your book and to your page where you do the coaching or tell about coaching and that, and give lots of publicity that way. So that's cool. Anything before we let you go that you'd like to sum up and kind of tell our listeners
about? I can't
believe
it's been 40 minutes already. I've got two sheets of stuff we haven't even got to, but we'll save that another time. It's all in the book. And I tend to over-prepare. When you all told me it was going to be kind of a casual hanging out, just chatting, I decided to just kind of let it flow like that and not worry about it. I've got so many stories from the home games, all the nicknames that we've come up with. I'm sure you've got them too. But you know, mostly I just want to thank your listeners for joining us today and allowing me to share, you know, what I've learned. And come visit me at pokerhoodie.com or pokernose.com and, send me an email. I'd love any comments about the book or about the products. And I really want to thank you guys, Bruce and Robbie, for all you've done and for having me on today.
Cool. And what's your email address, Gene?
I can be reached at Gene, G-E-N-E, at pokerhoodie.com, pokerhoody.com. You can also just find me on the web at pokerhoodie.com.
That's super. And I think we'll make an effort to have you back in maybe a few months and hear some of those home game stories. Oh, we'd love to do
100%.
That.
100%. This has been
you've
very...
got them all segregated out. We'd love to share them. So, you know, keep that in mind. I definitely think we'd like to have
Absolutely.
You back.
It's been very, very, very enjoyable speaking to you, Gene.
Feeling special. Thanks a lot, guys.
Old-time rounders faced a different travel experience when they left four wheels behind for two wings.
One outer. A humorous, peculiar, significant, or noteworthy story from the past poker home game.
Well, hello, everyone. This week's one outer comes to us courtesy of the great Mike Caro of Poker Tells fame. He, on his website, he was telling a story that he was traveling once upon a time many years back with Another amazing, legendary, wonderful person, Doyle Brunson, Hall of Famer, Doyle Brunson. And he was telling a story where they were waiting by the luggage carousel. And it's just, you know, what kind of Texas road gamblers they were. You know, they gambled on everything. So Doyle, he went ahead and he took a $100 bill out of his pocket and he put it on the luggage carousel. And it just started going away. And, you know, like just before it went away, Doyle's like, Mike, I'll bet you $50 that I won't see this again. So Mike instantly and, you know, goes ahead. He says, okay, I'll take that bet. You're stupid because, you know, you'll be out $50 either way, right? Whether you win or lose the bet. So Doyle's like, well, maybe so, but this way you'll lose too.
Misery loves company.
All the cards have been dealt for this episode of Top Pair. We hope you found it informative, thought-provoking, and entertaining. Robbie and Bruce will be happy to have you join them for our next show. Just a reminder, we love your input. Contact us via email at feedback@toppair.net. Give us a follow on Twitter at Top Pair and like our Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast Facebook page. After all, we're not always right, just 99% of the time. For a more in-depth look at the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, including access to past episodes, topics to be covered in the future, and links to information mentioned in the show, log on to our website at toppair.net.